You know, there's a reason for cautionary tales.
Then why don't more people heed their warnings?
I don't know. But after they hear my new show, they will think twice.
Oh yeah? About what?
Eating Tide Pods, playing with Ouija boards, tucking the Karens, you name it. If you should heed caution, we're talking about it.
Check out Harper's brand new podcast, Cautionary Tales with Harper. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you download podcasts.
And be sure to press subscribe and give us a review.
Cautionary Tales with Harper.
Subscribe wherever you download podcasts today.
Today's episode of The Grave Talks is brought to you by HelloFresh. Go to HelloFresh.com/GraveTalks90 and use GraveTalks90 to get $90 off, including free shipping. You can't go wrong there. HelloFresh.com/GraveTalks90. Use code GraveTalks90 to get $90 off, including free shipping. Today on The Grave Talks, Dark Hauntings, a conversation with Ashley Lucky. Why is it that some of us are drawn to the darker side of paranormal investigation? No matter how many stories we hear about the risks and the horror that some dark locations can bring on the living, they still draw us in. Is it the unknown? Is it the human desire to help someone in need, even though they may be deceased? Today, we discuss the drive to investigate the dark with Ashley Lucky on The Grave Talks.
I can't pinpoint, the first time I felt something or saw something that made me so intrigued. I think growing up, I had a bunch of imaginary friends, but I don't remember that as much as my mother does, seeing me go out in the front yard to quote unquote school and talking to this teacher and spending all day in the front yard. But as I started to grow up, it was more high school that I was really, really intrigued with it. And me and a couple girls would go around to haunted places around Pittsburgh, and one of us would get scared and scream and run away. But the paranormal wasn't as big then either, so sure. It wasn't like a lot of people had a bunch of equipment and was going around to these locations. So it kind of started in high school, and then I got the opportunity to work with people that had the same interests and wanted to take it seriously and had the equipment and were ready to really go after it. And it's awesome. I still can't believe it.
Just one of those things where it's kind of in you. You've always been drawn to it, you would say.
Yeah, I think I also have always been really good at, I thought I was always just really good at like reading people and like feeling people's emotions. I thought everybody kind of could do that. And then as I got more into the paranormal, I realized that it's not just, oh, I'm just good at reading people. I can just, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not that simple.
Yeah.
But I did find a place that I felt like I fit and people understood me, and it wasn't just me. It was awesome.
Sure. Let's take a step back. And you were talking about having imaginary friends. I know you said your mom remembers this much more than you do. And this is something I hear quite often. In fact, my wife on our other program, Real Ghost Stories Online, actually kind of had this revelation on the air one day where we were talking about imaginary friends. And she goes, wait a minute, you didn't see yours? No, I didn't see mine. and many of us don't. But to some, if that's the norm and that's, you know, what you're experiencing, you don't know it's not the norm until that's pointed out to you. You look back on you said, you know, you're playing school or classroom out in the backyard. Do you have any memories of that where you were actually seeing the imaginary friends?
No, and I think I'm actually grateful.
Okay.
because I don't know how I would have handled it then. I mean, people tell their stories of, oh, I saw my grandma whenever I was four. And I'm like, what? even now I would be terrified if all of a sudden I saw my grandma. So I couldn't imagine. I couldn't imagine. No. And I'm very grateful that I don't have any memories of that.
Well, let me ask you, do you simply not have memories of that, like the experience at all? Like when you look back on that, do you remember just talking to thin air and pretending people were there? Or do you just not have memories of playing, period?
No, I don't have memories of that time at all. My mom has pictures. She can tell me all about it, but I don't remember it.
So there very likely could be the possibility that you were, in fact, seeing them, but it's just it's just blocked out, essentially.
Yeah, my mind was like, she can't handle that.
Yeah. No. At some point, it's like, nope, let's move on.
Yeah, she's not ready for that yet.
When you talk about realizing that you had an ability for reading people, and you were kind of thinking this is, you know, everybody's got this. And then I think to a certain extent, I almost put everything like on a 1 to 10 scale. I think you're either a 1 or, you know, you're somewhere in the middle or you're a 10. You know, 1 being I kind of get a weird vibe from this person. 10, you can be like, they killed 7 people and their bodies are behind the Walmart on Pawnee. It's everything is kind of relative to the individual and their sensitivity. When was it? Was there a moment? Was there a time that you can think back to where it really stood out to you that you kind of had an aha moment of, wait a second, you mean everybody is not this strong in their ability of reading people?
Well, I think it's more like intuition. Like, I'm definitely not psychic medium. I can't look. I'm definitely not looking at someone saying they've killed 7 people. Sure. And know where the bodies are. But I do think that my intuition is very strong, and maybe I just know myself that well. But as for, I think it just continuously happened. Like, I would meet someone and I would tell one of my psychic medium friends, just hey, I don't really trust this person, whatever it is. And they'd be like, no, I think they're okay. I'm like, all right, I'm just telling you. And then a couple months later, I'd be like, oh, this person did that. You are absolutely right. And I'm like, I know. Like, I knew I was right. I knew I was right about them. I'm really usually spot on about people. And I don't know. Yeah, I don't know where it comes from it's odd. It sounds really bad that I don't have one moment for anything that is really like aha. I think it's just I kept testing it. Am I right? Yeah. Like, and after it happened so many times, it's like, oh, yeah, okay. It's not just, I'm not just getting lucky. I'm not guessing. You know what I mean?
Sometimes it takes the conditioning and the proof, you know, over and over for it. And it doesn't have to be a major event. You know, it could just be like, that person's kind of shady. You know, they're selling a lot of Amway and that's just weird, you know, or whatever it may be. You know,
it's just meeting someone and being like, oh, there's something about you and I don't know what it is. And then as time goes on, you're like, oh, I do know what it is. And then you pinpoint it and then it happens and you're like, oh, okay.
Sure.
That was right. Okay.
Yeah, I understand where you're coming from, where it just kind of builds up and then you start to trust the intuition more than the past because you've had more and more examples of it. I mean, how does that make you feel with that kind of ability of just, you know, knowing people? And I get what you're saying. You're not like psychic. You're not able to tell where the bodies are buried. But after, you know, having a conversation with somebody or being, you know, back in the day when we interacted one-on-one with humans, being in an elevator with somebody or something, and you just, you know, you'd get that feeling. Is that an ability you're happy to have? Is that an ability that is kind of frustrating to you? Or how do you feel about that?
Oh, I love it. I think it it has led to a lot of opportunities. Like, I wouldn't know, but it's also saved me, I think, in some situations. I mean, I haven't gotten into sketchy situations because I trust in my gut. But it's also gotten me into really cool situations because I was like, you know what? I just met this person. I don't know where this is going to go, but I don't feel anything bad about it. And it turned out to be a great experience, an awesome opportunity that I didn't hold back from because I trusted that.
It's not always,
so I love it.
It's not always for the negative. I get what you're saying.
Right.
I kind of feel like I operate the same way. I'm no means psychic. I'm not an empath, but I can tell people pretty quickly. And, and so I think I get exactly where you're coming from on that, where it can just be like, hi, I just met you. Let's be best friends now because you're I just know we click, you know, and then they kind of look at you like you're insane. But but that's, you know, that's a whole other conversation. So tell me more about how you began to dive into the world of investigating the paranormal. You know, in you know, out of curiosity, you know, I said, or you said earlier that it was, you know, in high school where you really kind of started to get, you know, some interest in this. And at that point in time, yeah, the ghost shows weren't what they are today. There wasn't podcasts. It was a different place in time 15, 20 years ago, way back in the day. But there was certainly, you know, a lot of us grew up watching things like Unsolved Mysteries and such. So, you know, it was there, but
it just wasn't as prominent. Yeah. It wasn't as easy to get into.
Yeah.
You couldn't just go to these haunted buildings, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it was going to the local places that people had said were haunted. And then I'd gone to Slippery Rock for college. And one night a group of girls wanted to go to a cemetery. So I had asked Adam Kimmel, hey, do you want to go to the cemetery with us? And he laughed in my face and said, no way. It's penny drink day at the bar. I'm not doing that. And I was like, okay, whatever. So then a couple of years later, this man, Adam Kimmel, messages me. We had kept in touch. And he was like, hey, do you want to be a part of this YouTube series? And I was like, what is it? He was like, it's for ghost hunting. It's all about ghost hunting. We're going to go investigate. And I like took a look at what he was doing and how serious he was taking it. And I was like, yeah, like, yes, I absolutely. Like, are you kidding me? This is like a dream come true. For sure, I'll give it a try and see. But I had no idea what I was getting myself into. I did it anyway. And through that, I mean, he started buying buildings. And I met the owner of Ghost Hunts USA. And he asked if I would like a job traveling around the country and showing people these buildings and how to investigate. And I think I got so lucky. I know that I got so lucky. It kind of came to me, which is crazy. But yeah, so from the YouTube series to working for Ghost Hunts USA, I'm now fully in it pretty much every weekend. It's awesome.
Sure. Back to the conversation in just a moment. First, I need to thank our supporter today, the folks at HelloFresh. These guys have got an amazing thing going on right now where you can get yourself $90 off, including free shipping. Yes, I will talk to you about that in just a moment. But first, let me tell you about why I love HelloFresh, okay? You get fresh, pre-measured ingredients, mouthwatering seasonal recipes delivered right to your door with HelloFresh. It makes them America's number one meal kit for a reason. HelloFresh lets you skip those trips to the grocery store, makes cooking at home easy, fun, super affordable. HelloFresh offers a convenient, no-contact delivery to your doorstep for easy home cooking with family. If you don't want to go to the grocery store right now, trust me, I get it. This solves that problem. Recipes are so easy to follow. That's another thing that I love too. I can cook, which obviously I know how to cook pretty good, but even folks in my household who are not super great in the kitchen can easily look at these recipe cards, follow them, and without stress, make an amazing meal. And in the turn, that kind of builds their confidence because it builds their skills as well. HelloFresh cuts out the stressful meal planning and grocery store trips so you can enjoy cooking and get dinner on the table in about 30 minutes. I love that. Great value too. You save about 40% when you use HelloFresh versus shopping at the grocery store. HelloFresh offers more than 20 chef-crafted delicious options every week to help you break out of your recipe rut. You try new things and make any night feel special. Here's some of the stuff that I've really loved lately. The Southwest Chicken and Sausage Rice Skillet. It's got salsa fresca on there and lime crema. It is so good. And a good old throwback, which I love. This is just a comfort food. And who doesn't need some comfort food right now? The Ancho Barbecue Sloppy Joes are awesome with pickle slices and oven gold tomatoes. If you want to go a little more fancy, they certainly got options for you there. How about the Chesapeake Steak and Lobster Tail with oven fries, creamy lemon garlic sauce, and mixed greens? There's so many awesome options for you. And every week it's exciting because you can look and pick what you're going to get for one of the weeks ahead. There's just so much good with HelloFresh. Packaging, all there, they are very, very conscious about sustainability. You know, by skipping the grocery store and using HelloFresh, you're reducing your food waste by at least 25%. I hate waste. And you really, you get what you get and you use it and people eat it. And it's just, it's a good thing. Anyway, here's the offer. You're going to love this. Go to HelloFresh.com/GraveTalks90. Use code GraveTalks90. Get $90 off, including free shipping. You cannot go wrong with that. Go to HelloFresh.com/GraveTalks90 and use code GraveTalks90 to get $90 off, including free shipping. HelloFresh.com/GraveTalks90. Tell me about some of the first investigations that you went on, where, you know, where it was, what it was, and what, you know, what ones that were active, ones that really stood out to you, where you had experiences that really, I mean, you can have the belief in it and totally accept that this stuff is real and never have an experience in your life. But when you have those experiences for the first time, you know, it solidifies something. It does something to more validate what you already believe. Tell me about some of those experiences where those moments happened for you.
The first time I investigated with Adam Kimmel, Rebecca Kirschbaum, and Chris Musgrove, we went to Saddamsville. We were saying Saddamsville for so long, and I don't think that's how you say it. I believe it's Saddamsville Rectory. And I actually got sick. Like, I got physically, I threw up from how intense it was. I'd never done anything like that investigating before, where it was like, it was very intense, and I got physically ill and was like, I don't know what I'm getting myself into fully right now, but this is fascinating. It's kind of terrifying. I like scary. I like a challenge. So it's like, okay, this is completely new. I'm testing myself in ways that I didn't even know I could. This is awesome. Like, let's see where this goes. So Danville is definitely the first place where I was like, yep, I'm in. And then we had gone to, man, I've gone to some of the most amazing locations, and I call them like the darker hauntings, mm-hmm. like the penitentiaries and insane asylums. There's something that is just so intriguing. And I like to know more. I usually like to dig into why spirits stay there. But yeah, I've had amazing investigations, like West Virginia State Penitentiary, one of my all-time favorites. I have had just like mind-blowing investigations there. Let's see, Madison Seminary for sure. I was actually just at, or did you want to go down the timeline? I'm so sorry.
No,
did
I mean, you're throwing them out there, and I'm making notes because I'm gonna back all the way up here. So why don't we take a moment and we can add more in if we get through all of these? But let's take a step back because I like to go into the story. I don't just want a laundry list of the places that you've been to. I mean, that's great. It's kind of like, hey, here's what's coming up, and that's fine. But let's take a step back all the way to you feeling physically ill is it Saddamsville? Saddamsville? I know you said it correctly earlier, but
I believe it's Saddamsville.
In Saddamsville. Give me the backstory about Saddamsville. What is its history? Why is it active? What is Saddamsville for those who don't know?
Saddamsville Rectory, and I don't believe it's still operating anymore as like a haunted location. I think after we went, they kind of shut things down. Mm-hmm. But there had been allegedly priests. I don't remember the whole backstory, but there had been priests that had been, I know there was something about molesting children there. I mean, it had a bit of a darker history. And you could feel it whenever you walked in that building. That was definitely like off. I'm trying to remember, this was 8-9 years ago.
So Saddamsville Rectory, this is a structure. This is a building itself. What does it look like? What does it feel like? What were you feeling as you walked in? I know you got to the point of being physically ill, but right when you walked through those doors, take us back to what you were seeing and what you were initially experiencing.
So whenever, yeah, I had walked in, it looked nicer and cleaner than a lot of the buildings that you see anymore. But the feeling was completely opposite of the way it looked. It was overwhelming. I mean, being that this was the first time that I was experiencing a location like this, it was a lot.
Mm-hmm. Did you know going into it the history of the trauma and some of the darker things that had occurred within the walls of Saddamsville?
No, I didn't know a lot of that. No, Kimmel usually kind of keeps that to himself at first, mm-hmm. and then we have Rebecca, who's a psychic medium, go in and do her read. And I kind of like to see, like, stay with her on that and kind of see what happens. I think if you know the whole history, whenever you're investigating, it can kind of,
kind of sway.
Like, influence.
Yeah, influence or sway your opinion, sure.
Yes, yeah. So I don't really, like, I like to know some of the history going in, and then I look into it more after I've already been there.
Sure. So you're in this location, you're doing an investigation. What exactly do you find? I want to talk about getting physically ill as well, but other than that part, which we'll talk about in a moment, what are you finding in the investigation portion of that visit?
There was I'm trying to think back.
Sure.
There's so much. Oh my God. I'm trying to think. I haven't watched that in like 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
But I know the one thing I remember distinctly was Rebecca was going upstairs while Adam Kimmel was going to do his quarantine. We do something where someone has to be by themselves for 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And we were going upstairs and she wanted me to go up with her and she was already upstairs and I'm walking up the steps and something just like stopped my body and was like, don't. And I was terrified. So I'm on the steps, like I'm trembling. I was shaking. And I remember the cameras weren't rolling and we like Kimmel will always be like, I can't believe that moment happened and I don't have it because it was so just like you were terrified. And I was, there was something that was like, nope, don't go any further. And then in my quarantine, I do remember feeling just, I was shaking. Like I was so scared. Mm-hmm. I was so scared. Yeah, there was lots of noises, knocks. I mean, little things there, but more feeling than anything that I remember.
What do you attribute that to? I mean, I'm assuming you'd been in some other locations previous. And I mean, one would look at that and go, is that a panic attack? Is that, you know, just because the environment is what it is? And sometimes we can just simply be in locations where the aesthetics are, they're just troubling and they can give you that vibe, whether there's anything there or not. When you look back on it retrospectively, why do you think you felt that fear, that trauma almost of and hesitation to go up those stairs?
I think these places where there is, I mean, there's dark everywhere. You're going to find no matter where you go. I think sometimes it feeds off of that fear. So whenever I'm already nervous, it's like, I'm only making it worse on myself. But there are also times where it's like, I do know what I'm dealing with. I mean, in that moment, I didn't. I was completely new to this, but I can tell you that I still get just as terrified and I've been doing this for 8 years. So I look back and I'm like, I still do that. Like, but I also trust my gut. I mean, there were things around me that weren't nice. It's not like every spirit you encounter is kind, but not every spirit you encounter is evil or rude either. So, but I don't know what exactly made me feel that fear, but it still happens and I trust it. I trust my gut all the time, especially,
sure.
Right?
When you have those feelings of fear and you're trusting your gut and you retrospectively look back on that fear, when you ask yourself, what am I afraid of? What's your answer to yourself?
What am I afraid of? I think that's a really good question. What am I afraid of? I think I'm going to have to come back to that, actually. I don't know what it is that actually, like, it's not, like, I'm not afraid of them hurting me, really. Like, I'm not afraid of any physical, I don't know what it is. Mm-hmm. That's a really good question. I'm going to come back to that.
It's interesting because it's the way I describe when people are in a haunted location or a location that has a lot of negative energy in it. And they just get overwhelmed with a feeling of negativity or fear, but they can't, you know, pinpoint what that fear is. I mean, it's one thing if you're like in an abusive relationship in a household with someone who is dangerous. You could go, I'm fearful and I'm feeling really negative and shitty, but I know why, because that crazy person over there has a knife in their hand and they're unstable. You know, you can identify where right. that fear is coming from. But when you're in a building like that and you don't, You get all of that anxiousness, all of that fear, all of that trepidation that you would have almost in that sort of situation where if you were by an abuser or somebody who is threatening, but you don't have that answer. And that's where I wonder how much of it is kind of like a download where you're feeling all those things. Are those your feelings, or are you feeling the fear of someone else or something else that has been in that same spot that you were standing in the past?
That's true. But because I feel that, like, I felt that fear a lot of places I've gone. I mean, what are the chances of me feeling? And it's very possible that I am picking up from other spirits that have felt that way. There are times that I do feel comfortable too. So, I mean, it's definitely, it's not like that fear stays with me the whole time I'm there. Mm-hmm. It does subside at points, but yeah, that's interesting. That's a really good point.
Yeah, it could go both ways, where you can feel totally welcome and this is a great place. And we've heard many stories like that too, where it can almost be extremely confusing because sometimes the house or the structure or whatever it may not necessarily be the nicest of places. And there may be the strangest things going on there, but people are still drawn into it almost in a positive way. And they speak of it with a lot of love and affection. I mean, the easy one that I go to quite often is my conversations I've had with Andrea Perrin about The Conjuring House, where, you know, lots of weird, dark things happen there. But she sat there. I mean, she was a child. She didn't really have a choice in the matter. But she still looks back on a lot of it with a lot of love and a lot of, this was, you know, positive, even though mm-hmm. she just gets done telling you something horribly scary that occurred. But it's like, oh my God, it's such an interesting thing where almost the two can at times work together. You said you are drawn into kind of darker haunted locations. I understand mm-hmm. that. I don't go out and investigate. I just enjoy talking about them, but I am drawn to darker haunted locations or hearing about them at the very least. Let's talk about some of those locations. I know you listed off the West Virginia State Penitentiary as being one of the most intriguing to you. Tell me about your first visit there and what that was like going through the doors, the gates, whatever you want to call it, of the West Virginia State Penitentiary.
It was overwhelming for sure. I mean, we pulled in the side gate, to kind of behind. A lot of people pull in the front and then go in through the front gate. We had gone through the side to set up and whatnot. We were there early. And as soon as you pull in, it's like kind of like heavy, very heavy. And it's like, okay. I mean, I get it. Maybe it's just how I'm feeling, whatever. So we go in. And we end up doing the tour, and we were all exhausted by the end of the tour. The tour's about an hour, hour and a half, just drained. Mm-hmm. Like, emotionally, you're just like, whew, okay, and now we're going to be here until 5 a.m? Like, how are we going to last? That was absolutely exhausting. But, I mean, the adrenaline really kicks in as you start the investigation, and it was, even though it's exhausting, it can also give you like that adrenaline pumping, that energy, and you make it until 5 a.m. Mm-hmm. I don't know how it happens, but
What's some of the history of the West Virginia State Penitentiary that you were aware of going into the investigation?
I knew that they did executions there. I knew that it was that they had one of the most amount of murders in a penitentiary, and that was not including the executions, which is 94, I believe. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I didn't look into a lot of the inmates or anything like that until after I had gone. I mean, I bought the book about the inmates. I really have looked into it since then, but I didn't know much besides that.
What did you discover for yourself while going through the West Virginia State Penitentiary?
Oh, my God. It was, they were so intelligent. I think these were some of the first really intelligent spirits that I had come across that, like, in the medical ward, it was a, hey, can you give us 6 knocks? And we're not going to do the 2 or 3 because we started to see how intelligent they were. And, man, they would give you, and not, like, light knocks, like, bangs. Like, I couldn't believe that this was actually happening. And like every place you went, there was something, it was a different feeling. It was a different, like down in the sugar shack was a completely different experience, but still active. But they're so smart, so smart.
Who do you think, when you're trying to identify, you know, who is in the West Virginia State Penitentiary, obviously the easy one to go to would be the inmates. But obviously there was staff, there was guards, there was many people who were there because it was their job as well. Some, you know, very much dedicating their life to it in a positive way. It's what they wanted to do. When you look back at the spirits that you encountered there, who do you think they were? And you don't necessarily have to say, I think it's this individual person, unless you have that. But in general, who do you think you encountered, or what types of individuals do you think you encountered at the penitentiary?
I mean, I do think that we have come in contact with, at least from what they have told us, inmates and prison guards. There is a part of the prison. It's is it death row? I want to say it's death row. Might just be Max. But anyway, there's a portion where it's there's like fence above you as well, so things like wouldn't come down and fall on the inmates. Anyway, around the outside of that, I have heard footsteps. I mean, I've been to West Virginia probably 10 times, and there will be, it sounds like boots, like walking around the outside of this, where these tables are. And we have had conversations with spirits that the one guy was a guard there. And so I think it is a mix of, I think upstairs there was a nurse. There was someone that was helping with medical as well. Mm-hmm. I think you get a little bit of everyone. I think it's not just one. It's not just prisoners. It's not just people that worked there.
And it sounds like it was, at least some of them that you had interacted with, were conscious. If you were asking them to knock 6 times, you get 6 knocks back. That's not necessarily just some sort of residual energy that happens to be timing out correctly with your questions.
Right.
So
exactly.
When you think about that and you think, okay, I mean, it's easy to pass a lot of things off in a penitentiary or asylum type buildings as residual just because of the repetitive nature of life. In those facilities while they were active. It was essentially, you know, you could time your watch by and now the pill cart comes down the way, mm-hmm. you know, or a nursing home or something of that nature. Here comes the ice cream cart every day, whatever it may be. Those sort of things are repetitive, and we can see those quite frequently in a haunting. But when you have this and they seem conscious and they're able to respond to you, this is just an opinion-based question. I'm not asking you to profess, here's the fact of what it is. But with the many years that you've been doing this now, what is your opinion? Why do you think a place like a penitentiary, you still have these conscious entities repeating their day-to-day activities and interacting with those who are visiting now? If they're on the other side, one would almost guess or assume, well, I would assume you have the freedom to leave the facility, but maybe not. What's your thought processes on there as to why they still choose to stay in a place like a penitentiary?
I have asked this at every location that I go to because that is the question that crosses my mind. Every time, I always want to know. why do you stay? And once I get someone in a conversation with me, I always ask. And from what the answers I've received to what I believe, I think some of these places are home to them. It doesn't matter what we perceive it as. Prison, a penitentiary would never be home to me. But for some people, that's where they've been their whole lives. Maybe that's where they feel safe. A really good example of this for me is the an insane asylum. Mm-hmm. So you have a kid spirit that is still there at Pennhurst. Children are still there. And it's like, why are you still here? You know you can leave, but it's not as easy as, like, they feel safe there. That's all they've known. Maybe their parents dropped them off before they could remember anything, and that is all they know. Mm-hmm. So being like, oh, why wouldn't you leave? Like, why would you? Like, that's terrifying. Asking someone to just, okay, go. And maybe some of these prisoners are stuck in their own personal hell. Maybe they can't leave that. Maybe they are stuck there. But maybe some choose. I think some people do choose. Some people don't know how to get out. So when people ask, we have crossed them over. So, which I think is part of why we do this anyway. So
that wraps up the first part of our conversation with Ashley Luckey about dark hauntings. In part two, does Ashley think the spirits at the West Virginia State Penitentiary realize that they are dead? And how does Ashley communicate with the dead during an investigation? What has been her goal while investigating dark locations? What frustrates Ashley most when she shows clear evidence of the dead to someone who doesn't accept the concept? And is it the duty of an investigator to cross someone over while investigating a location? All of that and more in part two of our conversation with Ashley Luckey. To hear it, become a gravekeeper. That's a supporter of the program. It's only $5 a month. That's what supports this program and keeps it on the air. When you become a gravekeeper, you get advanced access to our episodes weeks before they're released to the public in their entirety, part one and part two, as well as our entire archive of episodes, hundreds of them, just waiting for you to binge away on. You can sign up at thegravetalks.com, click Become a Gravekeeper, or go directly through patreon.com/thegravetalks to support our program and keep us on the air. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.